Good morning, and this is Roy Lowy, and welcome to Talking Travel. We have a very interesting show today, as we often do, but today is particularly interesting. First of all, Mr. Evan Eggers of OakCrew2s.com is on the road, or maybe on the water, and obviously it's our Internet's superstore, cruise superstore. And so I'll be giving you a couple of items, or at least one interesting item on the cruise news. We have a number of other wonderful guests. We have author and national travel expert Peter Greenberg will be with us, travel journalist Hans Tamamagi, Destination Canada travel journalist Karen Lapari, and Rediscovering America with travel journalist Bonnie Neely. Let me just go straight to a news item, and then we can go from there. First of all, there have been a number of problems with Mexico, and this is a good piece, and it says that the cruise ships again began calling in Cozumel, Mexico, this week following the damage Hurricane Wilma brought upon the destination last month. And the docks were damaged, obviously, by Wilma, so ships will anchor offshore and tender passengers into the island. The Carnival Triumph and the Celebrity Galaxy were the first scheduled ships to anchor in Cozumel, and by today, up to four ships will drop anchor there. Now, to welcome the passengers to the destination, local government officials and business organizations have a week-long event called Festival del Mar Caribe. That will take place in Cozumel's town square, and the fiesta will feature music, dance, performers, artisans, and street vendors selling crafts and paintings. So it's good news to know that things are getting back up in Cozumel, because they took a heck of a beating. I'm going to go to break, and then when we come back, we'll have Peter Greenberg will be with us. And we're back, and I'm joined by Peter Greenberg. And, you know, one can say an awful lot of things about Peter Greenberg, and I'm going to start with a couple of them. First of all, Peter has been an icon in this industry for a long, long time, and we're really pleased to have him with us today. And he's one of the nation's best-known travel experts and his editorial director for TravelNewsToday.com and AOL's contributing editor. And as I say, a legend in the travel industry. It's a pleasure to have him with us today. Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Peter. Are you there?
I am.
Ah, I don't know what happened. We kind of lost you there for that moment. It's all this technology stuff today.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. How about you? Can you hear me fine?
I'm hearing you a little muffled. I'm going to close the door here.
Okay, hold on.
All right. I'm ready when you are.
How is that? Can you hear me fine? Okay. First of all, I've already given you the introduction. I don't know if you could hear it, but the audience certainly could. And I thought what we might chat about today, if you will, Peter, is the holiday coming up. What kind of suggestions would you give to our travelers?
Well, the bottom line about the holiday is that anybody who travels on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving is performing a suicidal act. That Wednesday is the busiest travel day of the entire year, only followed by Sunday, the return.
Right.
And the smart thing to do is to travel on Thanksgiving Day itself as early as you can. You'll save airfares as much as 80%. And then here comes the fun part. You still get to go where you need to go in time to carve the turkey. You overnight on Thanksgiving night, and you come back on Friday late afternoon or evening. Once again, the only traffic you'll run into on Friday is at the shopping malls, not at the airports. The airports will be empty. You'll save as much as 80% on your airfare. And here comes the best news. You get home in time to enjoy the weekend while everybody else is out schlepping.
Good advice. What about fuel? I mean, obviously, people are driving. Are there any tips there?
Sure. The same principles apply. You're not going to save money at the gas pump. The gas is what it is. But if you leave late Tuesday night or very, very early Thursday morning, you'll save money because you're not going to be stuck on the freeways. Anybody who travels by car on Wednesday is in the same boat, no pun intended, as those people who are flying. Long lines, delays, and you're going to be burning up gas just sitting there on the road.
That's you're absolutely right about that. Now, what about the Internet, Peter? Are there some quick ways to try and get some information to maybe save some money,
Yeah, there's some great ways on the Internet right now. I just started a new initiative with AOL, so people who sign on to AOL get to see me up on the screen every day giving you very important tips that's essential information for you to use when you travel. The danger about the Internet is that so much of the Internet poses as being informational when, in fact, it's transactional. So the only reason why I agreed to do this for AOL is to give people content as king. give them the information they need to have so they can make reasonably intelligent decisions and be good comparison shoppers. So the Internet as a whole is a very good research tool, and sometimes you can buy on it. I'm also a big fan of the human interaction. Talk to a human being and get some comparison fares before you get locked in on any one particular site. Other than AOL, there's site59.com. I like that site a lot because of last-minute travel.
Yeah,
there's
we use
Pinpoint
that
Travel, and there's Kayak, which is a very good search engine, which searches a lot of sites.
Yeah, that we use site59 a lot. We find that that works really well. Let's see, what else? What about security at the airport? It's going to be horrendous, wouldn't you think, over the holiday?
It is, and here's what you need to know. You know, I haven't checked a bag domestically in 8 years. I believe there are two kinds of airline bags, carry-on and lost, plus the time involved. So what I do is I actually ship my bags ahead of time. I use FedEx, but you can use DHL or UPS or about 15 other services that will courier your bags door-to-door, and I actually save between an hour and a half and 2.5 hours of my life every time I travel simply by not checking bags.
Now, can you do that to a hotel from...
Not only can you do it to a hotel, when I get to the hotel, guess what's waiting for me in my room?
Your bag.
How cool is that?
That's really cool. Now, how about expense? Is it expensive, Peter?
Well, here's the difference. Everybody knows what Thanksgiving is. Everybody knows where Christmas is.
Right.
Most people normally know in advance when they're going to travel. So you can ship 2 and 3 days in advance and get a discount. And let's face it, when you're coming home, your dirty laundry does not need to be there positively overnight. It can come 2 or 3 days later, and you can save a lot of money. And anybody who wants to know how much it costs, I answer that by saying, how much is it worth? It's certainly worth to me to save an hour and a half to 2.5 hours of my life by not checking bags.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because we did interview someone who has that service, and it's quite informative, because I don't think a lot of people realize you can do this. I mean, people know you can send stuff via FedEx, but I don't think they realize that there are a number...
I'll tell you a funny story. When my first book came out, The Travel Detective, it featured me on the cover posing with my suitcases. My mom got the first copy. You know who got the second copy? Vince, my FedEx guy. Because he knew those bags better than anybody.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, that's really super. Tell me about AOL and what you're doing with them.
Well, what I'm doing on AOL is if you go on the AOL site and then go to AOL Travel, what you'll see is me pop up on the video with streaming video with good, important, up-to-the-minute travel tips. Let's face it, travel
right.
is news.
Right.
It's not just back-of-the-book pretty pictures. It's news, and people need information in real time in a real-world scenario that they can use to make independent and intelligent decisions about their travel. So that's what I'm hoping to do, and we just started it this week.
That's what I understand. Actually, on what, the 16th, I guess?
We just started it on the 15th, yeah.
The 15th or 16th, yeah. Now, will there be links, Peter, to some of these useful things like Site 59 and all of that?
I'm sure there'll be links, but one of the things that I think is important to note is not only on the AOL site, but even on my own newsletter site, which
right.
is travelnewstoday.com,
right.
I'm not a big fan of promotional links where you're always selling something. I think that's
right.
a big mistake. I think the credibility is an issue here, and I work very hard to make sure that the credibility stays.
Yeah, that's the way we do it with our site as well. We have links, but
we don't
book anything on the site. But we try to have in-depth, good, solid information like the sort of thing that you're
doing. I agree.
But now, it may be interesting for us to link to your site because they can get that kind of information.
Well, you know what? Either AOL Travel or the other site, which is travelnewstoday.com, which I do as a partnership with NBC. So,
right.
you know, we now embrace the concept, which needs to be embraced, that travel really is news.
Now, we have about another minute. Can you tell us a little bit about your travel detective book, Secrets
sure.
That
I do a series of books called The Travel Detective. There are
right.
four out there now. The fifth comes out in May. And it's all about, you know, being not a victim, meaning how to beat the airlines, the hotels, the cruise lines, the rental cars at their own game, playing by their rules. And the new travel detective book that comes out in May might surprise you. It's actually called The Traveler's Diet. I travel 400,000 miles a year, and I couldn't keep the weight off. In fact, I packed it on. I was desperately in need of losing weight, and I had to figure out a way to do it, still keeping up that travel schedule, and that's what I've done. If I can travel 400,000 miles a year and lose 60 pounds, which is what I'm doing, anybody can do it, and I'm going to tell you how to do it in that book.
Well, that's good, and we look forward to seeing that, and maybe we can have you back on and we'll chat about the book, because not only you're our hero, you're certainly Johnny Descala's hero, because he's on the road all the time.
We love Johnny Jet.
Yeah, Johnny's a regular. He's on every other week. Peter,
yeah,
I can't thank you enough, and We look forward to talking to you again
soon. Hey, thanks again. I look forward to it, too.
It's a pleasure. Peter Greenberg, a legend in his own time. And we're going to go to break here, I think. And when we come back, we're going to have Hans Tommaggi is going to be with us. And I'm not going to talk too much because he's waiting for a call.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fare starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, I'm back, and we're going to be joined here in a moment by Hans Tommaggi. You know, it's always an interesting segment and a pleasure to chat with travel journalist Hans Tommaggi. Good morning, Hans.
Good day, Roy. How's it going?
Ah, good day to you as well. And that brings up, I understand we're going to be chatting about a grassroots article you've written, Australia. And what they say, good on you, mate.
It's a beaut country, and it's Sydney in particular is a bonzer city.
Yeah, Sydney's terrific. I haven't been there for a while, but I actually worked for Qantas Airways for a while, and so I got to spend a fair amount of time in Australia, and some of the places that you mentioned, Bondi Beach and some of these others, are just phenomenal.
Yeah, there's no question. Sydney is one of the greatest cities in the world. And particularly for me, one of the best things was just living on the ocean and enjoying, you know, the ocean, the beaches, and all that. I mean, when you come from, I grew up near Niagara Falls, and sure, we had the Great Lakes, but it's not the same as the ocean.
So you got a chance to take a whim and went with your wife, kissed goodbye to the high-stress jobs, and left to spend the winter in Australia. What a nice thing.
Yeah, we effectively took about between 3 and 4 months and just decided to go off, and I was able to arrange a few little jobs while I was there as well, just to keep a little busy. But most of the time, we just toured around and really, really enjoyed the ambience, the wonderful friendliness and warmth of Sydney and Australia.
Well, I find that Australia is a very easy transition for Canadians and Americans. Primarily, they have, in terms of Americans, they have a similar sense of humor, as where, you know, it takes a little, you go to the UK, you go to Britain, and it takes them a little while to warm up to you sometimes. But in Australia, you know, open arms, friendly people, good times, and as you say, it's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, I don't think there's a friendlier country in the world. As you say, in Britain, there's still a bit of a class structure, a bit of reservation amongst the people. In Canada and the United States, it's less so. But in Australia, there's no class structure. There's no reservation. Everybody is friendly and trusting and so on. It's really good.
Now, you say in your article you got around a lot by bus and ferry.
Yeah, it's the best way to travel. Like, you got to remember, Sydney is a big city. It's 4 million people. They don't have throughways and big interstate highways that you know can take you from one part of the city to another. So really, the best way to travel is to, you know, is to not even bother getting a car or renting a car, but to get these passes. And the passes cover you for their subway, for their buses, and for the ferry. So you can go on any one of the three with the same pass, and it really works well.
Now, of course, Australia is a great surfing place, and I spent a little time up in Surfers Paradise and all of those places, and as you say in your article, instead of spending time in the malls, the Sydneyers congregate at the beaches at every opportunity, which is a nice way to go.
It, it's their way of life, you know. People, when they have some spare time, that's where they go. They go to the beaches. And the whole coast from north of Sydney, right through Sydney, down to south of Sydney, is one bay, a headland, and another bay with a beach, a headland, another bay with a beach. And they have about 20 marvelous beaches, and they're all surf beaches with great waves pounding in from way out in the Pacific, and glorious white sand, and of course a great hot sun, you know, blazing down from above.
And of course you have the Great Barrier Reef for snorkeling.
Yeah, the Great Barrier Reef is quite a bit north of Sydney, though.
Okay, we're concentrating on Sydney. So is Surfers Paradise. You're more or less in the Bondi Manly beach areas, is what you're talking
about.
That's
right, yeah, the Sydney beaches.
The Sydney beaches, yeah. But you said that there are a lot of helicopters flying around, which are basically doing shark updates to local radios, and I'm sure they're checking out some of the bathing suits and ladies on the beach as well.
Well, it's kind of strange. Like, you know, when we first, like here you have helicopters doing traffic reports,
right,
you know, to the news stations.
Right.
Well, down there they have the same thing, but they're providing shark updates, and they literally have helicopters on the busy weekends going up and down the coast there, along the beaches, and just checking for sharks and radioing and warnings, I guess, to the lifeguards and to the beaches. And we actually were there one day when that happened. It was just amazing. Like, the helicopter gave a warning, and, you know, some sort of sirens went off. The beach emptied. Boy, those Australians can really swim fast when
I would guess.
Like that happens.
I guess that's the first thing you learn as a kid, getting in the water, is how to get out quick.
Yeah, for sure.
But then
a big power boat went out and chased the shark away, and then a few minutes later, we're all busy swimming in the ocean again. But some of us stayed a lot closer to the shore than we did before.
Now, but you did go on to say, and as I well know, that they have these life-saving clubs, and they're really a great, dedicated group of people.
Yeah, I've got to say this. Australians are fantastic athletes, and one of the places where you see it best personified is in their life-saving clubs. And these clubs have saved thousands of lives. And these people that join, every beach has their own club, and they compete against each other, but they practice all these skills. Like, they go out and they practice going out on surfboards or in their big road boats or swimming out, towing a line. And just to see these people, they're fabulous athletes. Young, good-looking people, both male and female. And it's one of the most exciting things that I've seen is actually some of their surfing competitions when these clubs compete against each other.
Did you have any problems adjusting to some of this topless bathing?
Yeah, I had a sore neck for weeks. It is a wonderful habit down there, particularly the younger ladies. They will quite often bathe topless. And yes, it's for an old geezer like me. I quite often had whiplash and
the wife kind of nudging you with her elbow.
I had to keep a brave face because, you know, pretend I wasn't watching because my wife was with me.
And you get a little elbow on your side every now and then.
Did I ever? Yeah. The cuter they were, the harder the elbow.
Right. Now, we also know that, and as you mentioned in your article, the other big interesting things that people do there, of course, one of the big interests is sailing.
Yeah, I've got to tell you about the sailing. One of my dreams in my life has always been to go sailing on Sydney Harbor. You know, that's been the sort of the top of my list of things to do before I die.
Right.
And one day, I was very lucky that some friends of ours took me out, and actually it was their kids. There's about 10 university-age kids on this huge boat. It was about a 40- or 50-footer sailboat, and they were doing an informal Wednesday night race, and it was quite a puffy day, and it was just marvelous out there. You know, we were tacking back and forth, and the harbor is just loaded with boats. You have boats of every size, you know, from kayaks up to huge ocean-going freighters. But tons of sailboats, and the whole harbor is just white with billowing sails. It's gorgeous, and it's so exciting. Like, you know, we were tacking back and forth. As I say, it was quite breezy, And every time we tacked, of course, the boat would heel way over on the other side, and we're all drinking beer. So it's not easy to, you know, to flip from one side of the boat to the other, hanging on with one hand, with the other hand clutching a Victoria Bitter or a Foster's,
right,
and so on. But well, the highlight came for me is at the end of the day, this is an evening race, so as the sun set and the race was over, dusk came, the wind got quite still, quite soft, and there was a beautiful red tinge on the horizon, and light started coming on in the houses around us, and they let me sail the boat back, and we sailed underneath the Sydney Harbour Bridge and then past the Opera House with the, you know, this glorious dusk with the golden light on the and pink and pastels on the clouds on the horizon and the lights of Sydney all around us. It was really one of the most beautiful sights, one of the most beautiful experiences of my entire life.
And they also have a lot of rowing clubs there, I understand.
Rowing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they do. They're quite big on rowing, but that's done not so much on the
Sydney
ocean,
Harbor,
but on lakes and
right,
rivers inland. The rowing they have is mostly the rowing I saw anyway in Sydney was mostly done by these life-saving clubs, where they row their big life-saving boats out into the ocean.
Which is basically practice stuff, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and that's pretty exciting too, because you have to get up past the surf and breakers to do that.
Well, you know, it is the Opera House is absolutely gorgeous, and it is so beautiful to, as you say, passing the Opera House, going onto the Sydney Harbour Bridge. But I must tell you something. I was on an aircraft carrier, and when we got into Sydney Harbour, and we couldn't get onto the bridge. And of course, you know, everybody's saying, "Oh no, Sydney Harbour Bridge!" And so we had to anchor out. And I thought it was really quite amusing, because one thinks you take everything into concern when you build something like that. But who would expect an American aircraft carrier to come through there? So,
yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's the right place to go if you're traveling by sea, is to come into Sydney, you know, from the harbor, from the ocean side like that. It sounds like it was a marvelous treat for you.
Now, did you find there were any pubs in town?
Oh, pubs, yeah. the food and the pubs are fabulous.
Yeah.
And I've got to tell you, but the pubs, they're all self-service, which is nice. You just wander up to the bar and get your drinks and go back to your table or your little stand-up area. Much cheaper than in Canada here, and presumably in the States as well. So people tend to, in that wonderful warm climate, tend to knock back a few, and we certainly enjoy many a brew. But the thing I've got to tell you about, Roy, and I'm sure you remember this, is that they have fabulous restaurants. And the restaurants, almost all of them, or a good portion of them, are bring your own wine. And there's no tipping. Australia doesn't, there's no tipping in Australia.
Isn't that built, though? Don't they build in something into the check?
Yeah, it's built into, well,
it's built into the bill, right?
Wages to their staff.
Right, right.
And so therefore they don't have to feel that they got to get extra money from tips.
Right.
And on top of that, the taxes are built into it as well. So
I see.
The price you see is the price you pay.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a really good bottle of Australian wine, like excellent bottle of Australian wine for, you know, $8 to $10 Australian, and you bring that into the restaurant with you. And people are constantly jumping up, racing out of the restaurant, coming
running out of wine, getting more, and coming back.
Really nice wine. And it's you almost can't afford to eat out every night because it's so cheap and so much fun.
And you know, the Australian wines are quite good, actually. They're Shiraz and some of the others. When I was going over, the Australian wines didn't travel very well, but they must have come up with something, because I buy quite a few Australian wines here because I quite like them.
Yeah, and you're quite right. The Australian wines have become world class, they're certainly my most popular wine. And I know that when I'm at the liquor store here in Canada, that the most popular brands are the Australian ones.
Yep, that's good stuff. Hans, a very interesting article. It's a great destination, and I'm glad you've got to experience it probably more than once, I would think.
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
Exactly.
I might go again.
And we've got to run, and we look forward to the next time.
Okay, Roy. Well, it's been great talk and travel with you again.
Same here.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Well, that was Hans Tamamagi, and we're going to go to a quick break. And let's see, when we come back, we're going to have another Destination Karen piece, Destination Canada piece by Karen LaPerry. I'm just kind of stumbling over things here this morning. So stay with us. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back.
Native. Totally playful. totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again.
Well, we're back, and we're going to do another Destination Canada piece with Karen LaPerry. And, Karen, we're going to be discussing this fascinating article on the ICE Hotel. Good morning. How are you? We're going to talk about the ICE Hotel, are we not?
Oh, most definitely. The ultimate winter experience. So
well,
would you like me to tell you a little bit about it?
Yeah, I mean, in other words, I mean, you went from dog sledding to snowshoeing to sleeping on ice. Let's start out with the dog sledding, if you will.
Oh, most certainly. But first, I've got to say that these were all firsts for me. You know, growing up in sunny California, we don't really have the opportunity to do these winter-type sports. So this was just such a thrill, exciting opportunity, when you know, being up in Canada, up in the province of Quebec. And the first activity I did when I went to Duchesnay was dog sledding, something I've never done. And admittedly, I was a little bit frightened to take the helm with the dogs. I was afraid I was going to tip the sled. So my guide very kindly offered to do it while I took a ride under the blanket. And with my camera, you just photographed away on the beautiful scenery that went by. It was a real rush, let me tell you.
You elected to ride rather than drive your own sled, it appears, right?
Well, I copped out, but many of my friends that were there actually drove their dog sled and just said it was an experience they will always remember.
Well, now, you say that one of the dog's names, Excel, was raised from a pup, and although she is the alpha dog, can you explain what an alpha dog is?
Well, the alpha dog is pretty much the one that's in charge of the pack. The others look to that dog basically to see what's acceptable and what's not. And as was explained to me, sometimes that alpha dog is not actually out there out front, but may be tethered on the second or third tier.
I see.
But it's still something that all the other dogs know, and that alpha dog keeps them in line.
I mean, you know, very much like a lot of animals.
Yes,
like collect pigeons.
And,
yeah, exactly. Now, so then you went snowshoeing.
Yes, what a change. This was my opportunity to do a little physical exertion after such a wonderful sledding ride. And I had this vision of these old, humongous snowshoes that you see in movies.
Right.
And only to find out that those aren't used anymore. It's gone high-tech.
How's
that? So even though it was high-tech, I still had to ask for some help to tether my snowshoes on me, which I think second time around would be a piece of cake. And I went out there on the snow, and it was like walking on cotton. I walked all around the lake and just had such a thrill, and the only reason I came back was because it got dark.
Now, did it take a lot of energy, or would you just kind of just obviously just place one foot in front of the other? But those things are pretty wide from the photos I see in your article.
Yeah, but it was, it wasn't really. It was like taking an afternoon stroll. The only difference is you perhaps had a little wider pace.
Right. And a bigger footprint.
Yes, much bigger footprint.
Okay, so then you went to the ice hotel.
Well, you know, after you play and exert yourself, it's time to think about sleeping. But when you go to the ice hotel, sleeping really doesn't happen until much later. And so when I checked in, the first thing they did was gave a tour of the ice hotel.
Now, we might just mention that this ice hotel is in Quebec.
Yes, it is in Quebec. It's one of only three in the world,
There's one in Sweden.
There's one in Sweden,
and one in
a much smaller version in Alaska,
right.
And then the one in Quebec, which is going on its sixth year of operation.
Hmm. Now, does it melt down every year and they rebuild it?
Yes. You know, these things are seasonal. They kind of go with the weather.
Right.
And so what you have are 15,000 tons of snow and 500 tons of ice that are put together and crafted into this ice hotel. And the design changes every year. And they do it in 5 weeks. And they are usually open. This year it's going to be from January 6, 2006, through April 2nd of 2006.
Right.
And, of course, what happens after that is the weather gets too warm, the ice and snow start melting, and even though it won't be totally melted, they have bulldozers to help after April 2nd.
And everything is made of ice.
Snow and ice.
Snow and ice, okay.
Yes.
So,
it's phenomenal. It's like the McDonald's version of the igloo, you know, the supersized.
Right. Well, you said at first you thought it was a joke.
I did.
Yeah, exactly.
I just could not believe this. I had this image in my mind where I was going to go sleep in an igloo in a very confined, rustic environment.
Right.
This was not that.
So it was, and I, when I look at one of your photos, the photos are terrific, by the way. And those listening, please go to the site where you can read this article much more in depth. And there's a link to Karen's site as well. But what I found amazing was that when you got in there, the beds are ice, the walls, except that there was a fireplace, I think you said.
Well, jacuzzi and sauna and fireplace and indoor toilets that you don't have to go out and freeze. It's phenomenal. The honeymoon suite that I got a chance to tour when I was down there actually features this glass-encased fireplace. And obviously, some of it's contained because you can't heat up the room too much to the point where it melts. But it was—I think it's more of a romantic touch for those that choose to wed in this, you know, wonderful winter environment.
Sure, it'd drive you under the covers, wouldn't it?
Well, I tell you, if I had to do it over again, I think this is where I would choose to get married. It was just,
really,
you know, it's like a fairy tale.
Well, but you say now, but when you talk about going from the outside and you're going inside where it's warm. The temperatures inside are 23 to 28 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, to me, that's not warm on the inside while cold on the outside.
Well, and this is all relative. You know,
if it's 20 below zero somewhere else, I
suppose. Yeah. And, you know, this is your chance to break out your winter wardrobe and your fashionable ski pants and all that.
Yeah, well, being a Florida boy, 23 to 28 sounds very cold to me.
You stay warm. Because before you even go to bed, they have this wonderful ice-go-tech, is what I've been calling it. And it's called the Absolute Ice Bar.
Right.
But you go in there and you can have vodka splashed with cranberry or orange juice in these hewn ice glasses that are disposable since they're made out of ice. There's no dishwasher on the premises because they just dispense with it after you've had your little shot of vodka. And there's music, and people dance, and I think part of this is the design, though, because as you hop up and down, you stay warm.
Yeah, and of course, the vodka certainly helps.
Oh, heavens, yes.
I don't care what kind of glass it's served in. When it starts to go down, it sure feels warm.
Yes. I definitely have to agree.
So they have all the entertainment, all the dancing, all of the normal night entertainment, and... And then I suppose at some point you're off to bed. And I think what I found fascinating was the way you're saying that you at 2 a.m. you do a jiggle dance into your mummy bag, but the layers of clothing, if you'll cover that, I think that's particularly important and interesting.
Well, the ICE Hotel has a wonderful website, which I'd like to mention. It's www.icehotel-canada.com. I'll say that once again. It's www.icehotel-canada.com. And on there, they go into how you dress for this night on ice.
Right.
And if you should forget, don't have to worry, because when you check in, you have a guide who's going to once again go through all these pointers, and there will be a guide that can assist you that evening, you know, if, again, you forget, and even assist you into your mummy bag. But there's basically three layers that they recommend, and, you know, it really all kind of makes sense. You have this inner layer, which is usually thermal underwear, and you don't wear cotton. That's one thing I learned, because that keeps humidity by your body. Instead, you want something that's going to wick it away. A middle layer is going to regulate your heat, and that's where you wear your fleeces or your thermal sweaters. And then, of course, the outer layer is that which protects you against the wind. And it can be like, you know, a light ski jacket, light ski pants.
And so, and then you get into your mummy bag, and you're warm.
Yeah, but you know what? Make sure you have dry socks.
Yeah, you know, I hear that a lot about the cold. So, I mean, but aren't you wearing, you mean when you're in the mummy bag?
I actually changed my socks in the mummy bag and put on a new pair of dry socks, and I'm convinced that made a world of difference.
Yeah, well, I mean, that must be a little tricky, getting those socks.
Well, you adapt. I mean, when you're having the ultimate winter adventure, you know, you've got to be willing to try some new things.
What I was going to mention about one of your pictures is that it looked like they had Hilton carved into the ice. Now, I couldn't see the whole thing, but it looked like Hilton to me. Is that correct? Or
yeah,
was it a joke? Or was
last year's season, Hilton was carved into the ice, and that was one of the special theme suites for honeymooners.
I see. So the ice Hilton.
Yes. I guess it was an inside joke.
Yeah, when I saw that, I said, "Nah, that's got to be a kind of a joke, you know, like you say, an inside joke." Now, how long? I don't know if we covered how long this. You mentioned that it's open from January to April.
Yeah.
How long has the hotel been in business?
Well, they're going into their 6th year of operation,
right?
And every year, their popularity seems to, you know, kind of circumvent the globe, and it's not just Canadians that are going there, or Alaskans, or people from northern climates. They are actually attracting people from around the world, with visitors from Japan, Brazil, South Africa. Just truly amazing. And what it is, I think, is people seeking this ultimate winter experience. How many people can say they've slept on ice?
Not many. I mean, it's certainly not me. Not in the civilian life, anyway. Karen, it's a fascinating article, as always. It's a pleasure. We've got to run. Thank you for sharing that with us, and we'll chat with you soon, I hope.
Okay, well, I certainly hope so. Thanks so much.
Okay.
I really appreciate the time to share this wonderful winter experience.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Bye
bye-bye.
For now. Well, it was Karen LaPerry, and always an interesting subject, but I don't know. Sleeping on ice might sound kind of interesting, but I'm going to slide into my bathing suit and go for a swim after the show. So right now we're going to go to break, and we'll be back in a moment.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fare starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, we're back, and the show's been going very well. We've had a few little glitches here today, and we apologize for that, but we've had some technical difficulty, but I think we've gotten over most of it. But now we're joined with one of our favorite people, Bunny Neely, and she's going to talk about another Rediscover America. How are you today, Bunny?
I'm great, Roy. It's good to talk with you.
Good. Can you hear me okay? Because some people were saying they couldn't.
I can hear you, but it's faint.
If I bring this up a little bit, does that make it a little...
That's better.
Is that much better?
Yes.
Okay. We've just been having some problems here today, and I'm not exactly sure what they're all about. But in any event, you're with us, and that's important, and that's what will change it all. What are we going to chat about today?
Tacoma, Washington, right outside of Seattle. It's one of the prime examples in the United States of regentrification. They have had a marvelous renovation of their city in the last 8 years, and it's been completely transformed.
And just for our audience who may not have been in that area, it's just a few miles south of Seattle, is that correct?
Yes, it's about 20 minutes out of Seattle, and it is very close to, it is on the waterway, with the Puget Sound. And the Foss Waterway, it's one of the major shipping ports of the United States and of the world. And it was just a dockside city that was in dilapidation until about 8 years ago. And the city fathers and many of the city citizens decided they were going to regentrify and reinvent it for tourism. And it's now a wonderful attraction city, just an hour from Mount Rainier or Mount St. Helens. And a few minutes out of Seattle, right by the SeaTac Airport, and very close to the Vancouver, Canada area. So it's just an excellent place to go and visit and stay a week or stay a few days and go on.
Now, you were there during the Parade of Sails on the 4th of July, were you not?
Yes, and that was a magnificent display of the old ships from around the world in a water parade. It was just wonderful. Ships from the 18th and 19th century, mostly replicas, but really a wonderful event. And the city went all out for a number of days in there with big ceremonies and lots of fun things to do. And it was sort of the announcement of all of their opening, all of their new museums and just wonderful family things to do that are there now.
You even say that during the three-day festival, the docks were lined with entertainment from jugglers and musicians to tents of souvenirs and, of course, foods as you'd see in most.
Yes, and the impressive thing was that this city band together all of the citizens, the volunteers. There were hundreds of volunteers from different organizations, to make it safe and to make it run smoothly and to have no problems, because there were over 1 million people there for this. They had expected about 400,000, and they ended up with about 1.2 million for this festival. And they had no hitches, safety and everything, from the waterway to the safe. You can imagine in this day when we have to be so careful about safety and unavoidable things happening in large gatherings, they had made every precaution and just had everything worked out. It was just absolutely a wonderful event.
And they must have been overwhelmed at first. They said, my Lord, how are we going to handle all this?
Well, it didn't seem so. It appeared that they had planned for that many, and it just went smoothly as could be.
Now, getting back, go ahead.
The museums, they have five different museums in this area that are just amazing. There's an art museum, and which has a wonderful children's area and an area for teachers and adults to come in. They supply everything, including the instructions. You can create to your heart's content and either take it home or leave it there for display, and all for free, even for visitors. You don't have to be a member. And then they have the glass museum, a museum of glass, which is just marvelous. You can see glass blowers anytime the museum is open. They have this wonderful area where you can go in and watch pieces being created from start to finish. Dale Chihuly, the famous glass worker who is internationally known, he's being shown right now in 200 museums around the world, and he's a native son and has contributed a lot to this regentrification, and they have a Dale Chihuly bridge of glass that goes into this museum with a lot of his works on display.
And a lot of good photo ops, I would guess.
Oh, yes, because it has magnificent views of the city and of the surrounding area from there.
And you say there's a bridge of glass?
Well, it's called a bridge of glass. It goes to the Glass Museum, and it has beautiful chandelier on it, and it has a case displaying all of his glass works. The bridge is not made out of glass.
Yeah, they just call it it's a pedestrian bridge, but it transports you over to the interstate, I guess.
Exactly, and it's very impressive to see and to go across, and you see all these hundreds of his beautiful, incredibly expensive, valuable pieces of glass on display behind these in these cases there.
Now,
his regentrification started with a very interesting thing. There was an old Union Station there that when the rail, this has always been a major shipping area for both ships and railway, when some of the rails started being abandoned, the railroad people sold this Union Station building to the city of Tacoma for a dollar. And it was designed by the people that did the Grand Central Station in New York City. So it's a magnificent building.
How interesting. Yeah.
And this was years ago, and just before they started to tear it down, a group of citizens said, oh, no, we want to save this beautiful historic building. And they petitioned the U.S. government when the U.S. government was looking for federal courthouses, places, historic buildings to use as federal courthouses. And that's what this was turned into, and so the combined federal monies and local monies began the regentrification, and this was about 10 years ago, I believe. And so from there, the University of Washington bought a lot of the surrounding buildings and the wharfs, the old warehouses, and did some recreation of those and made it into part of the college system. And it's just a wonderful way they've transformed this.
Well, you know, it's great that there are organizations out there that get into this. You know, you often wonder in life, how can I make a difference as one person? Well, this is a way. You know, you get into some of these organizations for restoration and for preservation, and it does make a difference for generations to come.
And the hundreds of local citizens that got involved in it and stay involved and are so proud of their city make the visitors or the conventioners just really enjoy their city. There's Emerald Downs' beautiful racetrack,
right.
And there's a working wharf museum where you can go, and if you live in the area, you can come two or three times a week and pay just $300, and they help you build your own boat.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Isn't it amazing? And they have wonderful children's areas in all of these museums as well, children's activity areas. It's just one of the most impressive places we've visited in a long time, and we highly recommend it. They have a Carpelese Manuscript Museum, one of only eight in the United States, where they have incredibly valuable, priceless, one-of-a-kind manuscripts that you can see, and like part of the Gutenberg Bible, writings of Joan of Arc, Abe Lincoln's death certificate, even the manuscripts of Harry Potter and Star Wars and Star Trek, which...
Yeah, I got a kick out of the Harry Potter thing because my daughter was over, my youngest daughter was here for a few days, and she left the latest copy, and I'm three quarters of the way through it, so I'm Harry Potter'd pretty well.
I am too. Can't wait for the movie to start this weekend.
Now, there you did mention convention facilities, and that's always important in a place like this.
They have a brand new convention center in downtown, and a really nice Marriott Courtyard hotel right almost adjoining it, right across the street. And the facilities are marvelous for any kind of convention that you would want to have. And that's all within walking distance of these museums and all the points of interest and wonderful restaurants downtown. And then you're just a few minutes away from the Puget Sound and from the drive into the San Juan Islands and the drive into Canada.
And you mentioned that this this Hot Shop Amphitheater is where you go to watch the different glass blowers creating
yes,
these pieces.
Yes, that's within the Glass Museum.
Okay.
And you can go and spend hours, literally we did, watching them blow glass and use the furnaces to fire it and to heat the I don't understand the whole process, but you've got your old methods of the glass blowing there, creating modern pieces right in front of you.
Right.
And the big furnaces and all, it's very impressive to see. And then you walk right outside and you're on the Foss Waterway wharfs and docks, so you can see the ships, or you can rent a ship, board a ship or whatever there.
Now, you say in the Washington State History Museum, amongst other things, they have the... it's the what you call the moving accounts by First Peoples, members
yes.
of some of the 150 Indian tribes. My goodness.
Yes, in this area, there are so many different Indian tribes originally, and they honor all of these people. And the you've got marvelous displays of the First Peoples there, and lots of history that you can learn. And then the other thing that was so impressive to me was to go into the Great Depression Hooverville shantytown, which is right within this museum, and there's a recreation of people. It's a recording, but it looks like you're visiting with the people and you're hearing them talk about what it's like in the town, in the shanty towns during the Depression, and it gave me a new understanding of what people went through then.
And the artists you were talking about, collectors of, you know, for souvenir hunters, will find a delightful one of a kind items to purchase in the museum shops.
Oh yeah, shops. All of the museums have wonderful gift shops that have one of a kind items from all price ranges, from very inexpensive to quite expensive.
Right.
And the museum displays change every 2 or 3 months, and so it's always something new for you to see there. They have a really delightful zoo also, with Mount Rainier as the backdrop, and the zoo is really geared for kids, completely renovated this year, and all the best displays for the animals and environments for them to live in, and a lot of interactives for the kids. There was a wonderful little playground area where children can hop like a kangaroo, or swing like a monkey, and they have all these different little things set up for them to do, so they can imitate the different ways the animals get around and get the feeling of what it's like.
Well, and it's good to hear that places like this are children friendly. I mean, as you know, just getting back to the Foss Waterway Wharf, where they have a working waterfront maritime museum, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. for young and old, that in these boat classes, or where you can purchase the materials, you say, for under $300 and build your own wood canoe, and then the children can build toy boats and ships.
Right, they can, and the children's supplies are free.
Yeah, well, that's great.
Yeah, it really is. It's just a great place to put as a vacation destination or as a convention destination. We were so impressed with the way everything works for the visitors. It's, and the locals seem as proud of their city as well, and to work well together. It's just a great place to visit for any time of year also, because they have a mild climate, and it's just delightful.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. Super, super subject. And,
well, thank you, and it's great to visit with you again. I'll look forward to it soon.
It's always fun. Are you going away for the holidays, or are you staying home?
Staying with family.
Well, that's good. That's
and
what we plan to do.
And I hope you have a wonderful one, too.
Thank you very much, Bonnie. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, Bonnie Neely, very pleasant lady, always has some good subjects to discuss. We've had some technical difficulties today, and I apologize for all of that, but every now and then things go a little haywire. Next week we're going to run a pre-recorded show so I can spend some overdue family time for the holiday week. And as Bonnie just did to me and I did for her, I would like to wish all of our listeners my best for this coming holiday season. So next week will be pre-recorded. We'll be talking to you the week after. And this is Roy Lowy saying bye. Till next time, and Talking Travel is brought to you by the Travel Talk Radio Network, broadcast live from Florida Sun Coast and 24/7 online at TTRN. Now back to our regular programming.